Views expressed by interviewees, guests, or other voices on this podcast do not necessarily represent the views of Wolf Radio or affiliated parties. Welcome to Sincere Voices of Victims, the podcast where we give a voice to those whose lives have been forever changed by tragedy. I'm your host, Deborah Pearson.
It crushed me. Like, I couldn't do nothing. I dropped my phone and I just started crying. I laid on the couch and I was crying. And if I'm hurting this way now, how I would feel when I see her laying in the casket.
In this episode, Double Murder in the Wiregrass, we bring you the heartbreaking story of a community torn apart by senseless violence.
Based on what happened and the severity of it, the brutality of what happened, it really we had no other choice.
On November 21st, 2021, the lives of two young women were cut short in a tragic shooting in Dothan.
According to Dothan Police Department, the girls were attending a social gathering at a home on Fifth Avenue when they were found dead.
So at some point, we have to send a message that there's ramifications to what you do, whether you're, 21 or 14. If you commit a crime this heinous, there's consequences.
But whoever did do it should not be walking free. But at that age, I don't know how our parenting world is. There's too many people dying from guns.
On the day she was killed, at 12:38, I believe, she had the baby in her arm and the baby was asleep. And after we left, she told that baby, "Thank you for letting me be your mommy."
Her exact words to me were exactly what she told me was, she said, "I feel like my time coming." She said she just didn't know when.
Mike, I'm at the intersection of Hamilton Street and Fifth Avenue in Dothan. And tonight, it is pretty quiet. But last night, it was the scene of a double murder investigation where 14-year-old suspect Vincent Lamar Oliver Jr. is accused of killing Jasmine Bean and Jalexis Wells.
911, what's your emergency?
When police arrived at the Dothan home on the 200 block of Fifth Avenue, they found Jasmine Bean and Jalexis Wells dead from gunshot wounds. Neither Bean nor Wells lived at the home.
We have gained some information that there was possibly a party, but maybe a get-together at this location. And there may have been an incident from that.
Oliver Jr. was named a suspect by police this morning. Almost 3 hours ago, police confirmed that he had been taken into custody.
And I'm dearly sorry to both parents. I can only imagine this. This is very sad, having babies killing babies, for one. It is awful.
I'm Deborah Pearson with Sincere Voices of Victims, Double Murder in the Wiregrass. This is the story of Jasmine Danielle Bean and Jalexis LaShawn Wells. Join us as we explore their lives, the aftermath of their deaths, and the pursuit of justice.
My name is Priscilla Bean. My daughter is Jasmine Danielle Bean. She was 21 years old, the mother of one.
So tell me about Jasmine and her childhood.
Most people know by now, Jasmine was adopted. I got Jasmine from the Southeast Medical Center at 3 days old. My son Christopher was in Kentucky. He came home and to bring her home, and he just fell in love with her. At that time, I was a foster parent. My sons, Christopher and Bruce, was like, "Mom, we don't want anybody around our sister." The thing about Jasmine was I only supposed to keep her for 3 weeks to train her parents. The 3 weeks turned into 21 years. So we did legally adopt her, and she was a busybody. Jasmine loved people. She loved her church. Jazz and I, my father was sick for 19 years with dementia and Alzheimer's. So he went from the nursing home, hospitals, back home. Every Saturday, Jasmine and I went to see him. We would go to the hospitals and I would dress her in little can-cans and ruffle socks and hair bows, and people would say, "She looks like a little angel." And she had the heart of an angel. Not to say she didn't have her bad points, because she did. As she grew up and society took a hold, Jasmine had got to where she stuttered and people would overtalk her and it would anger her. And those 16 teenage years, it got to where she would fuss you out, curse you out and stuff, then come back and say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. But she was so tired of people over-talking her and pushing her away because she was a little old bitty thing. Jasmine was 4'7", 92 pounds.
Oh, wow, she was tiny.
Yeah, and so she let her heart carry her. But then when she got angry, she let her anger overtake her. And so, but she would always come back and tell you, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. I'm sorry. Jasmine and I was, she was like my ride or die. I could go and do anything, and she was like, okay, let's go, let's go. And then if it didn't work out, she would say, well, I didn't think it was. I said, why didn't you say something? Because you wanted to do it, Mom, and whatever you want to do. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. It's, Jazz is, she's just a little fireball. She was my little fireball. She thought I could fix anything. I sit here today and I can't even fix myself. I can't even stop the pain of losing my daughter. And sometimes I can hear her whisper in my ear, Mom, what the hell's wrong with you? You know I'm all right. And I know she's all right. I know she's in the arms of God. She's in the ark of safety.
BU organization stands for Beautifully Unique. Beautifully Unique helps me to work on the inside of me. BU helped me to be positive, emotionally, spiritually, and physically strong. It helps me to define who I am in my life. We are still learning who God made us to be. In today's world, society portrays negative images of young ladies, but BU helped us to be who we are. We are the daughters of King.
She was a very mannerable young lady. She wasn't perfect. She was a 21-year-old young lady trying to find her way in life. Jazz wanted the world to be happy. She wanted everybody to be in a great big party. And that wasn't reality.
What was she involved in high school?
Everything. She was the student coach of the boys basketball team at Northfield. One year she did the junior football boys. In middle school, she was a cheerleader and volleyball. But she was so short, they made her the student coach. Because like I said, she was 4'7". She was pretty much to everybody else's waist. And everybody said, oh, little baby, she's our little baby. She's our little sister. And so sometimes it would aggravate her and stuff, but she would love it.
All that Miss Priscilla Bean has left are memories, and this recording she shared exclusively with me of Jasmine's gender reveal of her daughter Azalea, born in 2019.
I don't want no blood.
Here.
Take that pill. Wait, no. Wait, Mama, you're not even recording. Look at the camera. You gotta look.
Now do the girl. Do the pee here. I told you it was a girl.
She says her daughter still speaks to her through her granddaughter, Azalea.
I have a desire for Jasmine's daughter, Azalea, to live the life similar to her mom. Jazz was carefree as a child. Azalea is carefree.
And how old is Azalea?
Azalea is 4 years old, and she thinks, like her mom, the world owes me. We talked to her about her mom, and she kind of understand what happened to her mom. Her mom have came to her several times and stuff, and she tells me things that her mom had told her when I'm having a bad time. And I said, see, that's only God. Mm-hmm. It's allowing her to speak through that child because he know I wouldn't listen to nobody else but that baby or Jazz. We're kind of dealing with her death as well as we can. It's a one day at a time situation. Some days good, some bad, and some are horrible. And so, because Jasmine was my best friend, I did not realize how much people always said she depended on me. I did not realize how much I depended on her. How much I did not even know how to go to a restaurant without her. I always tried to make sure my children was exposed to other avenues in life. And so whatever she wanted to do, because it was 19 years and 6 months between my next child and Jasmine.
How many?
I have three. I have a stepson, Bruce Bean. I have my son, Christopher Bean, 41, and Jasmine, which was 21. She would be 22 right now. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, she'll be forever 21. I don't know if she'll ever stop being my baby. I don't care what age you might consider it. I don't even know if I will ever say she'll ever be 21, because I also know my baby as my baby. Mm-hmm. And stuff. And we did a balloon release on her birthday, which made her 22. And so, and I might just keep doing as long as God give me the strength, because she's with me. She never leaves me. She is here with my family and stuff. And we hear her. We know what she would tell us to do. And so, and my anger, she have told me, no, Mama, this is God's will. And it's helping me to overcome the anger that I had, that was changing me. And I was not a mean person. I was not an angry person. I like to help young people. I want to nurture and make this a better place so these kids can get out here and quit running and being fearful of their life.
We sit down with Beatrice Hornsby, the grieving mother of Jalexis Wells. She opens up about the indescribable pain of losing her daughter and shares how her faith has guided her through this unimaginable tragedy.
My name is Beatrice Hornsby, and my daughter was Jalexis LaShawn Wells. She was 20 at the time, and she turned 21 on August the 30th, 2002 was her birth. And she was the last of the Mohicans, as my dad say, because I'm a single parent with five. I have four girls and one boy, and she was the baby. She was spoiled rotten, oh my God, and she was something else, because she was sweet, kind, happy-go-lucky, lived a beautiful young life, until you made her mad. She had this spot right in the middle of her eyebrows. It'll poke out, and that's when you know that she was upset, and that's when you do not mess with that young lady when she get upset. But she'll turn around and say, oh, I'm sorry. You're my best friend. Jalexa, she, during school, she did cheerleading a little bit, but she was into hair and nails and dressing cute. So that's what she did most of her life and stuff like that. And she worked at Walmart, and she had the biggest smile. Her smile, when you're having a bad day, you just look at her smile and it makes you feel so important and all warm and fuzzy in the inside. When you just see that smile, I have a lot of the employees come up to me and say, I am so sorry, Ms. Hornsby, but we miss that smile. They say Walmart is not the same. They say we feel her presence in Walmart, and we feel sad or down, and we'll go in the area where she works at, and it just like lift up their spirit. They was just so happy to see me that day I came in there. And I was like, well, you know, it's sad what happened, but I know God got this. God got this. God don't make no mistakes. Everything he do is on time. He has built my faith in him. And also he is still protecting me, because he was preparing me for something before this even happened. He was preparing me. I just didn't understand what it was. But he was just leading and guiding me, and he still is leading and guiding me. He's opened my eyes to a lot of things, because I would not want another family to go through this. It hurts me to even the thought of another family have to go through the same path that me and Miss Priscilla is going down now. That is a hurtful feeling. But through God and his wisdom, he are showing us the way where we can help other people that is going through this. Mm-hmm. It's very important that the knowledge he blessed us with, that we return the knowledge to help somebody else along the way.
What do you miss most about your daughter?
Her smile, her laugh. It's like I can get in from work and I'd be so tired, and I'll sit right at the edge of the bed and doze off, and I can feel an imprint of her sitting down at the end of my bed, and then she'll rub my legs. I can feel her rubbing my legs. Mama's gonna be all right. Mama's gonna be all right. I told you I'm gonna take care of you, Mama. You're not gonna work all your life, Mama. You finna be blessed, Mama. Don't worry. Don't worry, Mama. I come to check on you. Everybody okay, Mama? Don't worry about it. It's gonna work out for you.
As we move forward, we bring the latest developments in the case. Houston County District Attorney Russ Goodman reveals a significant decision that will shape the course of justice for Vincent Lamar Oliver Jr., the 14-year-old suspect accused of taking the lives of Jasmine and Jalexis.
Based on what happened and the severity of it, the brutality of what happened, it really was we had no other choice.
4 months prior to the murder, DPD says Oliver had active juvenile pickup orders, a first-degree attempted assault, and one count of discharging a firearm into an occupied vehicle. Yet, he wasn't arrested until shortly after the shooting.
You know, I don't know why he wasn't picked up. Being 14, I think he was not in school, and so that may have been part of the issue, is just trying to find the young man.
Russ Goodman, the Houston County District Attorney, explains why the 14-year-old suspect will be tried as an adult.
And we want to get justice for the victims. And, you know, I think if he had gone through the juvenile system, that would not have been justice based on what happened. So at some point, we have to send a message that, there's ramifications to what you do, whether you're, 21 or 14. You know, if you commit a crime this heinous, there's consequences.
Not only did the double murder shake up the community, it was even more egregious that the crime was committed by a juvenile at the age of 14.
And I'm dearly sorry to both parents. I can only imagine this. This is very sad, having babies killing babies, for one. It is awful.
Did you all know the 14-year-old?
I didn't. I didn't know him, but Jalexis did. I have a video where she's saying, "This is my son's son. I'm going to take care of him." They sit beside one another playing, and she's playing in his hair and saying, "This is my son's son."
What did you think when you saw that video?
I'm not angry and upset with that young man for what he did, because I forgave him for what he did, because I look at it as I'm no better than him, because I don't want that bitter and I don't want that madness in my heart, because I told my daughter we'll meet again. And the only way we're going to meet again is if I press on and do what's right. That young man, he need help too. He need guidance and he's going to have to get in touch with God. He's going to have to come to Jesus meeting. He's just going to have to do it.
Take me back to when you found out what happened. How did you find out about this?
Actually, I found out through Facebook. One of my son's friends lived in Dothan. And so he was like two houses down from what happened. And he texted my son and said, "Hey, something happened to Shorty, your sister. Y'all need to come see what's going on." So we jumped up and I live in Enterprise, so we got like downtown, and we've never been to Dothan Police Station. It was Sheriff pulled up right beside us. He was like, "Something happened. We need to get to Dothan Police Station." She hit them lights, and we just followed her onto the Dothan Police Station.
Miss B, tell me how you found out.
Well, I was at home, and Dothan City Police came to my house, and they informed me. And I'm not really a person to open my door at night. And I was doing my dishes, and I was on the phone with Azalea's grandmother. And I kept hollering, "Who is it? Who is it?" And they kept saying, "It's Dothan Police Department." And I was like, "What y'all want?" You know? And stuff. And so I peeped out the window. The baby came, and I was like, okay. And still, I was so like, why are all these lights around my house? Why, you know, what's going on? And the lady from Angel House, Katie, finally kind of convinced me to let them in. And she came in with them, and they told me and stuff. And I really didn't believe it. Jasmine hadn't been 4.5 hours left my house during the time they said she was killed. She left my house at 4:30, had been there all day and the night before. And stuff. So it was an awakening. It was an awakening. And so my heart, it's still taking me a while, even after my family got there, to believe it. And my neighbor, which was Jasmine's godfather, he came across the street and he was like, "What's going on?" And I told him, and he was like, "No, this is not, you know."
They were at a party, is that correct?
It's supposed to have been a get together. Some say they was invited. Jazz went to be with Jalexis. And so the young man that was the owner of the place, that rented the place, he said Jazz had only been over there maybe 2 or 3 times. And so, but
was it a house party?
A little get together at a house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We just left the house.
You just left it today?
Just right before we came here. I took B over there.
Was that your first time?
Yes, ma'am.
Going inside.
You went inside.
Yes, mm-hmm. ma'am. That's my first time.
I've been inside 2 or 3 times.
What was that feeling?
The first time I went in, they was cleaning the place out, the man that had bought the place. And it was just like, I was just there. It have taken me a good while to get my feelings back. And I'm a loving person. I'm a compassionate person. But this have changed me, and I don't like it. And my children don't like it. They want me to be who I was. And as we talk often, that we'll never be exactly who we were. But I know Jazz's heart. And I know how Jazz loved people.
Ms. Hornsby had never visited the crime scene until the day of our podcast recording. She explains how she felt walking in the last place her daughter was seen alive.
Well, when I went through the doors, I just felt like, okay, this is all where it happened. And it's like it just quenched my spirit and said, okay, Beatrice, because that's what she'll call me. Beatrice! Okay. This is what happened, but I'm not here. I am with God. So, don't fall apart. Just be strong, Mama, and trust in God. It's okay.
We have to get out of our human selves to recognize what the true calling is mm-hmm. for this. Is mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And we all, yes. that human side of us wants to look at everything in human eyes versus spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really good that you all are taking that spiritual approach to get you through, because that's the only way you're going to make it.
Mm-hmm. And we truly know that God is the only one. I tell people, of course, it hurts. It kills me when I cannot reach over and pick up my phone and call her, and she'd be like, "Well, Mama, what you want? I want to talk to you. Mama, leave me alone. Okay. I just want to hear you back." But God is the one that is the author and the father of all this. I constantly tell her friends, when our name was written in the book of life, he gave us a birth date and he also assigned us a death date. We don't know when either one of them is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if the doctor say, "Oh, we're going to give you a C-section on this day." Well, it might not work. You might have to come back 2 days later. Because that's God's plan. My baby sit there at my house that Sunday and told her best friend, "I feel like I don't have very much longer here on this earth."
Really?
Yes. On the day she was killed, at 12:38, I believe, he said she told him that. And if you go to the next day, he asked me if he could post it on his page, and he did. The whole conversation that they had.
It crushed me. Like, I couldn't do nothing. I dropped my phone and I just started crying. I laid on the couch and I was crying. And if I'm hurting this way now, how I would feel when I see her laying in the casket. Her exact words to me were exactly what she told me was, She said, I feel like my time coming. She said she just didn't know when. And she said that all she wanted to do was make her mom and make her daughter proud. Because like I mentioned earlier, she was changing.
If you go back on her Facebook page on November the 14th, we was at her apartment. The baby always stayed with me, but she had an apartment. She had the baby in her arm and the baby was asleep. And after we left, she told that baby, thank you for letting me be your mama. On November the 14th also, her and my baby boy was always at odds because he thought he was her daddy. He wanted her to go to church, go to work, be a mommy, stay home, don't go to the club, don't drink, don't. But that was his little sister, that was his little girl. Him and her had a conversation that day at my house, and he told her he was proud of her because Jazz had started to go into Spectre Care. Jazz had started going to Al-Anon classes because she had said she wanted to get her life back the way it used to be. And she decided that she needed help. And she realized on her own that she had to get more help than I could give her. I would pick her up after I would drop Azalea off at school, take her to Spectre Care, then take her to Southeast Medical Center to work. And once she decided that she wanted to change her life back to the way it was.
Jalexis also called me that night and she said, Mama, I'm feeling weird. She said, something going on, I can't explain it. She said, I know I need help because, see, she was battling mental illness. And you know, I'm a single black female African American, and you know, we don't voice that. We don't talk about that. You know, it's like, it's not cool for African American kids to have mental illness and stuff like that. But see, we got to stop pushing it down. We got to be open-minded to it. And see, we got to educate ourselves about mental illness so we can help our loved one and everybody else down the line. So she was like, Mama, could you take me to get some help? I said, yes, ma'am, I can. I'm proud of you recognize this issue you having. And she said, Mama, I just don't feel right. Something going on with me, Mama. Something's about to happen. I just don't feel right. And then she put on her Facebook page, she said, I'm so tired. I need to rest. 2 weeks prior before the killing happened.
And even when they was there in the house that day, a lot of Jazz friends and stuff was saying that she was on live and she was asking people to come get me. I feel some type of way. And see, to me, that's just God showing you it's time for you to come home. Jazz had the girl that used to do her hair live less than 3 blocks from her. A couple that used to live around the corner from us lived straight down Lafayette. She knew where these people lived. Parks Chapel was less than 4 blocks. She could have walked up there and called. She could have called me. She could have called her dad. Because we was all sitting at home in the living room. But it didn't matter. It did not matter who she called. Because the people that she actually talked to, and they called me and they said, Miss Priscilla, she called me and asked me to come get her. And I was doing something else and I didn't go. I told him, baby, it's all right, because she could have walked out that door and a car could have hit her, because it was her time. That's one thing we all got to understand. When God's hand is in the plan, it doesn't matter what we do.
What did police tell you about what happened?
They pretty much told me Jazz had been killed, and they didn't really go into details. That night they didn't go into a lot of details. They stayed there, they questioned me, they asked me, at the time I didn't know who the young man was, if I knew this person. I was like, no. And so
they had an idea in the beginning.
Yes. And so one of the officers, he knew me and I knew him, because you know I worked for Dothan City School for all those years, and he used to be a resource officer there. And because I still didn't believe them at first, and so I went and got pictures of Jazz and showed them. They was like, yes ma'am, this is her, this is. And And then he said, "Miss Priscilla," he said, "look at me." And I said, "yeah." He said, "you know me." And I said, "yeah." And he said, "you know, I won't tell you no story." He said, "Jasmine was shot and killed tonight. Lady from Angel House played with Azalea." And so, but they didn't really tell me a whole lot and stuff. But like as B said,
what did police tell you when you first heard about it?
So when we arrived at the police station here in Dothan, they took us in his room and all the police officers we had met, they gave their condolences and stuff like that. And Katie, she was from Angel House, she was there and she was like, "we're gonna help y'all in any way we can." And you know, they were so sorry. And it was like 1:30, the detective came through and he was like, "Miss Hornsby, I am so sorry. But is there any way that you can identify that that is your daughter?" I said, "yes, she has a railroad track tattoo on her arm, because when she was hurt, her sister running through the house playing, you know, she gets so goofy when she giggle and laugh, and she stuck her arm through the glass and brought it back out. And she cut right below her elbow, and she had to have 75 stitches. So that's the only, that's, he was like, "I'm so sorry, Miss Hornsby, that is your daughter."
How has the Angel House helped you all?
They've been angels.
They are beautiful. They are beautiful.
I love them.
Me too.
They came in the first night, and like I said, Katie played with Azalea. Azalea attached to her right away, and I'm very suspicious when it comes to Azalea. And so I was like keeping my eye on Azalea and stuff, which we all was in the living room and everything, and even after my family got there. And so, but they attached themselves just like family. They didn't come in acting funny. They didn't, it was like, and Shelly, oh my God, Shelly, she is something else. And so I can text her when I'm in my feelings and she'll read the text. And I try not to call her. I try not to call anybody too much. And, she'll shoot me a text back, and if she's in a court or something, she'll tell me, "I'm in court, but let me tell you this." And she'll go on. It's not like, "oh, I'm in court, I'll talk to you later." She never does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. we jump up and go to Angel House. And with me being here in Dothan, I go more than B. It was just sometimes things would just jump on my mind and I would just go and somebody there and I would tell them how I was feeling or what I needed to know. If whoever I was talking to did not know, they would say, "let me get with Rita Bundy." Rita would text us back or she would call me. And then when she went and left, I was like, "oh my God, our family is starting to fall apart," you know. They have walked this walk with us, this journey. They have made it easier on me. And if I could do anything to help them or any victim's family, I tell them all the time, if something happened and somebody, mother needs to talk to us, give them my number. It's all right. Have them to call me and we can talk about what I went through. I can't tell you how you're feeling, but I can tell you how I felt. And they recommended counseling. We put Azalea in counseling. People say, "oh, she's just three." She went to counseling. My other granddaughter is in counseling. And if I could get my two boys in counseling, that would help them a lot, because they're still holding a whole lot of anger and I don't like it. And so, but I can't tell them how to feel, because can't nobody tell me how to feel.
Have you all met the 14-year-old?
Not, we seen him in court. We seen him in court.
And he was about the same distance that we are with you. We was mm-hmm. real close to him.
Yeah.
What did you do?
It's like he was in the chair swinging back and forth, and he swung and we locked eyes. And then he like, hurry up and turn back. And his mom stood up. We even saw his mom. She looked at us like we wasn't even there, like we didn't even exist.
Does anybody know her mom? His mom? What? Because apparently he was just in the street.
I think one thing that would have helped me a lot when we went to the first court hearing that we went to, if he would have turned around and looked at us and said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean for this to happen," that would have helped me, because like I said, I'm a compassionate person, and he was 14. Even though all the horrible stories and the articles and the videos that I have seen, it still would have helped me have a little bit more compassion for him and his situation. Investigator Nelson, he had called. I tell people now, a lot of people say, Dothan police didn't do this, they didn't do that. When Jasmine and Jalexis was killed, they called me sometime more than I wanted them to call. We went down there, I mean, soon as Jazz's body got back and we started making preparations for her memorial service, we left the film home, went to the police station. If he wasn't there, he left the file to where, what's the other little officer name? It's another little officer right there next to him. He knew where to go get to tell him what he needed us to know. But he called and he said, "We're going to have to eventually go to court. I need you and your family to see the crime scene photos." He said, "Because when we get in court, if they have to put him up there on the scene, we do not want you guys to react." So myself, my two boys, and my daughter-in-law went to see the crime scene. And when he pulled them out, and so my son pulled it to his side first, and so, and then they eventually brought them around to me. I prayed. I asked God to give me the strength to be able to withstand what I need to go through. So when I seen Jasmine and she was shot, she had a little blood on her, the bullet spun her around, and she was like on her knees praying. So that gave me peace to know that my baby was steadily praying. She did not see him getting ready to shoot her. She didn't know what hit her. She died instantly.
What was your reaction when you saw it?
Me and my oldest daughter, Chandra Hornsey, she's like, "Mom, are you ready to see the crime scene pictures?" I said, "Well, baby, you know, God got us. We got to go ahead and face our obstacle, because we have a long road to go down." So when we got in Mr. Nelson's office, and it was just a big old book. I mean, God, it was huge. And he flipped the page back, and we got to looking through. And my baby was, it's like she was, it hit on the side of her neck and went down her body, tore up all her organs on the inside. Then it came out the other side of her neck. She fell back like she was asleep, and she had like a smile on her face. It's like, it let me know that she didn't suffer. They even showed autopsy pictures. We saw all of that. But I held it together, me and my daughter both, because it was like, we was like, had a smile on the face, because she didn't suffer. It's like, we know where she's at. She is God, unchanging hands. She is okay. You know, it's just like she was asleep. It's like she was just laying there resting, and she had a hand over her cell phone. She had a hand cuffed over her cell phone. I did get that back. I got her cell phone back, and to this day, it still got her same blood on there when they returned it to me, because I just haven't had the strength to wash it. I have started sponsoring young ladies that can't afford to go to the prom. I started last year in the honor of my daughter's name. I get their hair done, nails, and purchase their outfit and stuff. And also, starting next year, I'm going to give out scholarships in the honor of Jalexis Sean Wells' name, that one's going to go to Cosby College of School with a good GPA. I'm going to give out scholarships for her in her name.
Oh, wow. What a wonderful way to remember her. What about you, Miss Bean?
I think I would I tried to talk to more parents. I want parents to grab hold of their children. We're burying our children. We're putting our children behind the gates. The parents got to step up. We got to step up. Every time you talk to somebody, you guys or us or any news, somebody got something negative to say. Instead of them trying to find something positive to come out of this, of course, I hate my daughter is gone. I hate it because that was my ride or die. So her purpose was fulfilled. Her life, my baby enjoyed the crap out of her life. I'm telling you, if I could be as happy as that girl was, everything, because she was happy. She had some bad days, but she had more good days than she had bad days. And she enjoyed her life. And we got to get life back to the way it used to be. We might not go back to the dirt roads and sweeping yards and all that stuff, but we got to get it back to where we let God lead our families.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Sincere Voices of Victims. I'm Deborah Pearson, your host. Together, let's honor the memories of Jasmine Danielle Bean and Jalexis LaShawn Wells and strive for a world where such stories are never repeated. Stay tuned for our next episode where we continue to raise sincere voices for the victims.